G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Welcome, Rama.
Good morning. First. Wow. Yes, I like this. Right. Well, I am probably more important than Scotty, so that's a given. Look, it's a busy time, but it's a tricky time also for managers, for players, for football clubs. So a lot of talk at the moment, not a lot of action.
Yeah, we'll get to that shortly. Scotty, good morning.
Good morning. It's a tricky time for your lies, isn't it? Because your whole week's built around telling the truth. So how do you lie straight in bed when 87 journos ring you and say, Jamie Elliott's in Brisbane? You go, no, he's not.
I said, yes, he is.
Jamie Elliott's just there to visit his brother?
He was.
And then they had footage of him.
He still is.
Then they had footage of him at the Gabba.
Well, sometimes you have a longer layover in Brisbane.
You giggle at how many calls you get, though, don't you? Yeah. You get the, what's happening, Rama?
Yes.
You don't like that at all, do you? You only like the ring me with a specific inquiry?
Correct.
We'll get to that shortly, because there's so much to talk to Rama about, both about
on this program, whole, you say the truth.
That's right, about all the sort of the backroom stuff, but also he's just the way it's turned out. He's had plenty of people that he manages that have been in the news. We are going to catch up with Jack Trent in around about half an hour from now. A lot of people won't know much about Jack Trent. Jack Trent he goes to university in Las Vegas, and he played on the PGA Tour last week at the Shriners, and he finished in 29th position as an amateur, and his hero was Adam Scott. And Adam Scott rang him up out of the blue and said, hey, I want to have a practice round with you. We're playing the same event this week. And he went on and finished inside the top 30, beat Adam Scott. But he had four consecutive rounds in the 60s. So now I will say I caught up with him on Monday as part of the PGA Golf Club, the new podcast. And just as he was coming off the 18th hole, and his head was just spinning. He couldn't believe quite what he had done, and he had to, the next day, go to school.
Where's he from originally?
He's from Australia. He's Australian, yeah. And he's been sort of packed up with his family when he was about 15 and went to America because he thought that was going to be his best pathway forward.
Smart move.
To become a professional golfer. So can you chat to him just, a few days later, just what it means to his golf, what he's done, going back to uni to see what his mates say, all that sort of thing. So it'll be interesting to have a chat to Jack in around about half an hour from now. We've got netball, international netball this weekend, so Caitlin Thwaites will join us from the Diamonds. They've got matches in New Zealand and in Australia through this little period. Stephen Wells from the Geelong Football Club will join us. Obviously, the big news yesterday in the trade world was that Tim Kelly has got to West Coast with a raft of draft picks heading back Geelong's way. And probably now the next question is, what are they going to do with those picks? Are they going to trade them for players, or are they going to keep them? I mentioned the Socceroos are in action tonight. That's in Canberra. They're taking on Nepal. So that'll be interesting to see how that all goes.
Blockbuster-ish.
Would you call that, are they minnows?
I think you can go with that.
And then a little bit later on, we'll chat to Brad Green about Neil Danaher's drive. Part of supporting Fight MND. And there's a bit of racing news, it's fair to say, that is floating around. And we'll try and get Matt Stewart to unpack all of that, because there was plenty of controversy, plenty of
There was news. Controversy in the early mail, too.
We will get to that later on. A little bit disappointing, but you want to give someone
I can spin it positively.
I'm a little bit disappointed in Robert Hickmott, to be honest.
Oh, that was horrendous.
Declared one.
Yeah, no, that was...
Not in the top four.
The stalemate was nearly going to beat it.
Yeah, no, that was a bit of a setback for us. But anyway, 6:08, if you want to give us a call, particularly with Rama in the house, he'll have all the answers
yes,
for you.
Oh, yes, please.
We've sort
Hit
of
the
had,
open line.
Yeah,
it's a
ask
Rama
Rama. 1-300-652-927.
It's like a telethon.
0416-90-50-52. You can tweet us at RSN Breakfast, and also on the Facebook page, RSN Racing and Sport. It is nearly 6:09. Rama, I usually like to sort of save this stuff for a little bit later on, but how has your week been?
It's been a busy time, not just this week. I think the past 4 to 6 weeks have been busy for all managers that have players potentially involved in this period of the year. So Yep, obviously it hots up over the last 10 days, and the start of this week has been probably, to use a word, interesting. But we sit and wait. There's only been one trade happen. There's a couple of free agency deals that have gone through, but you know, you start to expect, and I say this every year, I think today and tomorrow are really important days, and Sunday is a really important day for clubs just to position themselves where they want, if they're losing a player or if they're getting draft picks or whatever that may be, that they can go into next week with some sort of confidence that deals are going to happen.
Why Sunday?
I think because, again, Monday's the first day of the working week.
So you can't do trades on Saturday and Sunday?
No, you can't. No. So
really? In this day and age, the AFL can't open its doors?
Closed.
Oh, my.
Closed. So then it's, you know, Wednesday night, 7:30, I think, is the finish of the trade period. So you need to be, by that Sunday sort of night, you need to be reasonably organised. I think we do see a lot of trades still go down to the last minute, and that's because clubs want true or the highest trade value that they can possibly get. Now, you look at the Tim Kelly deal yesterday, and we're going to be lucky enough to speak with Stephen Wells later. The value on that trade is enormous for Geelong. Enormous.
And this is why I respect Stephen Wells. He could have...
Get the deal done.
Haggled, he could have...
Could have waited till West Coast improved their position.
Told them to get three more spots better or something. Mm. And he's gone, we know this will enable him and his club to do multitude of things.
Well, Stephen Wells, in my time in management, has always been a shop early type of person.
Get it done.
Get it done. Move on.
Help
what else can
player,
we do?
Help the player, help the club.
And is,
what else can we do?
I don't think it's any... coincidence, or it's not an accident that Geelong have been able to transition as successfully as they have been able to do through, you know, through generations to generations in the last 10 or 15 years, because they've traded well. And they've
there's
traded
goodwill
early.
With the clubs they trade with.
Yep.
Now, we know there's other clubs who, you know, try and be difficult, and sometimes I think it comes back and bites them.
How much is Geelong moving early on Kelly Rammer got to do with the fact that they then want to be able to trade those picks?
Oh, no doubt. No
so
doubt
they need not. Enough time to be able to do that. Is that fair?
Yep. So as it stands right now, Geelong have got 14, 17, 24, 36, 37. So five picks inside 40.
Oh, wowee. So 14 and 17 can become 1, 2, 6 or something, mate? Not one, obviously, but...
Look, there's no doubt that GWS want to move up the draft at some stage. They've got an academy kid by
Green.
The name of Tom Green, who will probably go in the first, I reckon, 5 to 7 players in the draft, so he'll be
so
nominated by it.
So
they need to get inside that pick, so then they'll get 2 first round picks. So I expect GWS to move up the draft order at some stage. So, and I fully expect Stephen Wells. He mentioned yesterday. He goes, "We've got 5 picks under 40. Can we move up the order and have 4 picks under 40? Can we move that 14 up the order? Get inside the top 10 and go from there." Like there was a. I saw our man Swamp on Twitter yesterday talking about Brownlow votes from picks 1 to 10, 11 to 20, and so on and so forth. The picks 1 to 10 in the Brownlow voting and in best and fairest voting, it's ridiculous how far in front it is.
So there's been a feeling, and this is to both of you, that Geelong will use those picks to get players because, you know, Gary Ablett's playing on because he thinks that Geelong's in the premiership window. So, you know, taking all those picks with young players isn't necessarily going to help their cause for a premiership next year. Jack Stevens, the obvious one, and yeah, you think that's definitely going to take place, particularly with the activity that St Kilda has displayed this week. But are there any other players that we think that might be on the radar?
Well, I'll be interested to ask you. I mean, Ruckman, you'd think, but there's not many out there. So, no, I haven't really heard other than Jack Stephen who they might be circling. It's a very good point. They might have a game plan that I'm not aware of. Ramo, have you... Is Geelong come on your radar for any other players of note?
Nope.
Like, Jack Stephen should be 36 or 37. One of them would do it nearly, wouldn't it?
Well, if you listen to... and again, we can ask Wellesley this a little bit later. I think he may have been thinking that. But I think St Kilda might be thinking he has a little bit more value, if you sort of read in between the lines of the comment.
Hasn't played for a couple of years, over 30.
Yeah. No.
They're supposed to be doing the right thing, like Geelong does, and helps out a player get to fresher pastures.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the surprise ones yesterday was that Dougal Howard chose St Kilda. Because it did look like Collingwood was on the radar, even maybe Essendon as part of the Fantasia deal.
Dougal's declared St Kilda.
So right now, St Kilda have Dougal Howard,
yeah.
Brad Hill,
yeah.
Paddy Ryder, and...
Zach Jones.
Wow, wee. Good on them.
So they've got four transactions they have to do. So at St Kilda have pick six, and then pick 59 and 76, and then their future picks.
And they haven't got a lot to trade with, have they?
So they're going to have to do six for Hill. Isn't that what they think they're going to have to do? Oh,
potentially.
But or they give six and get 14 and 78.
They need to get some picks in.
Mm.
Well, maybe it's Geelong.
So there was a mention of Blake Akers yesterday and him potentially going out and how that looks. So,
well, Dougal Howard you could do for a second round.
I always find it quite interesting when clubs go for all these players. It's almost like they don't expect to land them all. Now, St Kilda have landed them all. So they're almost on a promise. They are on a promise to that player that they have to get him in.
Sounds like Lockie Weller all over again. We're talking before, Emma, about the fact you've got Jamie Elliott and Mason Cox. When you were alerted to talks between Collingwood and Essendon, apparent talks between Collingwood and Essendon for Mason Cox, when that first came across your desk, did you know about it or were you shocked?
No, I'm never shocked at this time of the year of any conversation that goes on. The issue of this is that really neither party, Collingwood or Essendon, was saying
they did it.
That they wanted him. Now,
so I did like West Coast Eagles pop up under the table.
I actually had more journalists calling me about the situation, to be honest with you.
But did Collingwood fess up that they raised it with Essendon?
No.
Did Essendon fess up that they asked Collingwood about? No. So
did it happen?
Did it happen?
Well, they had conversations.
But who instigated?
Someone has to say...
I don't know, but it got put to bed very, very quickly.
Well, because the impression that Collingwood's trying to dump him for salary cap relief, and that if I'm Mason Cox, I'm like, oh, hang on, I know it's this time of year, but that's worse than another club asking about me.
Yeah, yeah. I don't... Collingwood at no stage put Mason Cox ever on the table.
So then Essendon's asking then. Or a third.
Like I said,
I was
getting more information from journalists about this.
But they were right, though. That's the thing.
I think at this time of the year, all clubs have conversations about players. Now, I think this may have been two clubs having a conversation. His name came up and...
Someone brought his name up.
It ended very, very quickly. We all got on the phone.
This is the Rammer hour the pump.
No, in all seriousness, we all got on the phone together.
No, I appreciate that.
And it was put to rest within 10 seconds.
But if I'm Mason Cox, I'm ringing my manager, i.e. you, and going, who put my name up? What happened? And you have to tell him, well
apparently
Bucks.
He was... Essendon were going to rush to Sydney to do a medical before
Essendon,
he left the country.
No, Essendon never spoke to Mason Cox. And Collingwood, at no stage, put Mason Cox's name forward.
Well, I'm now completely intrigued.
Exactly.
No, but I'm actually quite annoyed about it because it's either happened or it hasn't.
But then they did have a conversation that was brought up by an unknown person, instigated by a third party.
Like I said, it was put to bed very quickly.
Maybe what happened was that Collingwood and Essendon met last in that sort of, you know, and there was like a cleaner, cleaner, and you know, go, hey, any chance of Mason Cox going... going to Essendon?
Good point. We're losing Joe Danaher. Well, yeah, that's not bad. What do you reckon?
Mason Cox will be playing. Mason Cox is on a plane this morning back home to Dallas to see his family at 10 a.m.
So you're led to believe.
I'm not led to believe. I know for fact.
So the problem is apparently because you're too good at your job, you signed him on a poultice, and Collingwood now have salary cap issues. Is this correct?
No, that's not correct.
Okay,
so he's on a fair contract.
Fair and reasonable.
Mm-hmm. And Collingwood's under pressure.
Every
club's under pressure.
Not as much as Collingwood.
I think you'll find that a lot of clubs find it tricky to manage their salary cap.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was a text.
So this is from our Gareth Hall. Gareth Hall, he's texting right now. He's saying, I'm on the back foot here.
he's now, in the other studio. He's that far out of this.
The Jamie Elliott scenario, was there a moment where you thought, he's not playing for Collingwood next year?
With Jamie, it was always a case of, and I said this to Collingwood very, very early in the piece, that he didn't want to begin talks until really towards the back end of the season. Now, it happened to be right at the end of the season by the time he got his... He was playing really, really good football, and that's when he felt confident to open talks with Collingwood. My dialogue with Collingwood was always open through the whole time. And in that time, other clubs came. That's just how the system works. Now, he was interested in meeting other clubs. Brisbane were absolutely sensational. Melbourne were absolutely sensational. Two terrific clubs. There's no doubt about it. The way they presented was absolute first class, and you can see why players want to go to both of those clubs. But in the end, it was a simple case of he had absolute no angst whatsoever at all with Collingwood. So it came down to, why am I leaving for here? I love this football club. I'm highly engaged here. We just played in a prelim final. I've got unfinished business to do. The deal that they put forward to him is very, very fair. So he signed at Collingwood, albeit he did his absolute due diligence at a couple of other clubs.
Gee, that was good from Rammer then. He didn't answer the question.
No.
That was fantastic. He really went into playing and management role there.
Well, I answered the question.
Well, that's on the back.
The question
of...
was there a legitimate chance that he was going to leave that football club? Did you think at one point he was going to leave?
If he was meeting with other clubs, of course there was. Of course there was a chance that he was. If he wasn't meeting with other clubs... And now, he's in every right to meet with other clubs.
Absolutely.
He's an unrestricted free agent. So that's what
it's his job.
That's what
it.
The players wanted. They wanted this situation, and he was in his right to meet other clubs. I guarantee you, most guys that are out of contract that are in demand are meeting with other clubs as we speak. And unfortunately, some guys in contract are meeting with other clubs.
Rammer's just called for the arm guard.
Oh, wow.
Chest guard here.
Next, come on, let's go.
Right,
what have we got on the SMS? We haven't had any callers yet. Gareth Hall.
Joe Danaher's the other one. So this is obviously away from you. It's not.
Oh, it's managed. In your building, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in my building.
It's the bloke sitting next to you.
What do you think is going to happen? It's a simple question, but a difficult question.
Look, those two clubs have had dialogue. There's no doubt about that.
We don't need these words like dialogue.
Yeah,
no, but they have. They've spoken.
You're a normal person.
They've spoken.
Well, that's it. There you go.
Essendon and
go-to terms that we've got to stop.
Essendon, Sydney has spoken. I still think this is a long way away.
And how... Okay, so if you're Essendon, Joe said, I want out. Mm. Normally, I mean, Tim Kelly aside, the player gets his way.
Yeah. But it's going to have to be fair trade value for Joe. He's contracted to Essendon. We know that as his management group. So we're going to be trying to push as hard as we possibly can to make sure that our client gets to where he wants to go.
And he's two first round picks, isn't he? On the basis of Shield, Gibbs, all those.
Well, there's precedents everywhere.
Yeah,
yeah.
But there's varying precedents. Like I think it's often unfair to say, oh, well, Dylan Shield got two first-round picks, so Joe Danaher should get two first-round picks. Firstly,
every trade's
one's
different.
A midfielder, one's a key position player. Joe's upside is incredible, but his downside is also quite realistic.
And you've got to trade for the upside.
And the injury. You've got to trade for the up. Yes, you do, but also...
If you're the one holding him in your hand.
Because he's in contract, we were talking about this yesterday, because he's in contract, Sydney need to pay more than what would have to otherwise be the case.
Over.
And the complicating part of all of this is that Essendon wants players, not picks.
Well, what picks have Sydney got, Ram, on your little list there?
They got five, and then they think they'll get nine for Papley.
Which is outrageous.
Now, they could split that nine and get what,
they got Ramo, 5 and 25.
As it stands.
As it stands right now.
They could split nine and get, you know, I don't know, 14 and 18 for pick nine. And then
14 and 17 from Geelong. And get nine.
Yeah, something like that.
Or they get 19 from Richmond. Sort of. There's a lot of different scenarios.
But is that more realistic, rather than 5 and 9 for Joe, it would be 5 and 17? Because my feeling is that that's a more realistic situation for Joe, but I don't think Essendon will trade on that.
No.
What about a future first rounder as well or something?
Yeah, there's always that.
You've got to throw
there's
a future always, in.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you look where Sydney finished on the ladder.
Yeah, it's attractive.
This year, like that's, you know, we're getting back into the scenario with Adelaide and Carlton.
David King on Fox Footy last night suggested that Essendon needs to think outside the square, and he threw up someone like Taylor Walker as a potential replacement for Joe. So again, Joe goes to Sydney.
That's a good idea.
The picks, and then the picks go to Adelaide, or some of the picks go to Adelaide for Taylor Walker to come and play out of the goal square for the Crows, and for Essendon from the Crows. And I think that's the sort of thing that Essendon is doing behind the scenes, is that they are, not necessarily Taylor Walker, but they are actually just feeling the temperature in the room with a few players that they would like to bring in, knowing that they could have this heist of heat, an embarrassment of riches with picks that they could try and tempt clubs with players that they wouldn't normally even contemplate getting rid of.
Right, Taylor Walker needs a change.
Is that fair, Rami? Is that sort of the sort of thing that could be going on?
Oh, I think they're going through multiple scenarios at the moment, the Bombers and Sydney, of how they want to get it done. And that's what I said. I still think we're a long way away from any of this yet, unfortunately for Joe.
Yeah, but Essendon needs to get it done quickly enough to be able to then go to that second phase to do something with those picks.
Yeah, and potentially Sydney as well.
So you play on the PGA Tour for the very first time as an amateur while still at university, and you shoot 67, 69, 66 and 68. It's quite an extraordinary achievement, and that is exactly what Jack Trent did, a young Aussie who lives in America. He goes to university in Las Vegas, and this golf tournament was in Las Vegas, and he joins us now online. Jack, thanks very much for your time.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Now, I know you've done a heap of media. I know you spoke to RSN on our golf show a little bit earlier on in the week. But now the dust has settled a few days later. How are you thinking about it all now?
So, was that my cat was screaming at me. I apologize.
Now the dust has settled on it all. How do you sort of, I don't know, come to terms with what you did?
I snapped back to reality pretty quickly with 5 a.m. workouts the next day, so that hit me quite good. But after all that, kind of looking at the results and, you know, going over the stats and everything like that, and what I did was, you know, pretty cool. A weird stat I didn't even know until I found out actually this morning was that apparently I'm the first amateur to make the cut on the PGA Tour in their first start, which I thought in 20 years. So apparently that's, I was really happy with that. It was really cool. I'm over the moon still, you know, just the way I was able to handle myself and, you know, go through the week and not let it really affect me. Like the whole big scheme of the PGA Tour and, I'm over the moon still.
Now, I know you've told this story quite a few times, but I want you to go back to the start of the week when you got that phone call from Adam Scott and what happened after that. Adam Scott being your hero, and he rings you on your mobile, and you take it from there.
Yeah, no, I was actually, as I said, I was at the gym doing bent rows, and I hear my phone ringing, and usually I don't answer if I'm, you know, doing a workout, but, you know, someone told me I probably should. And I looked at it and I saw a +61, so I knew the Aussie number. So I figured it was probably my dad or something like that. And then I answered it and I hear, hey, it's Adam Scott. Is this Jack Trent here? Is this the right number? And I kind of, yes, this is it. So I was like, I dropped the dumbbells and kind of like went into quieter space. And he said, would you like to have a game with me on Tuesday? So I kind of stepped that up and, I played a practice round with him, and it was really cool. A phenomenal guy, you know, really down to earth, really chill, and just easy to talk to. So, really fantastic for me.
Now, Jack, you got a link though. You go to the uni that Adam Scott did, University of Las Vegas.
Yep. He went for about a year and a half, and then he went over to the European Tour. So far, I'm in my third year here, but I've been following pretty much exactly what he has been doing. Not by stalking him or anything like that. Just same home course, same high school, same college, and I told him, I promise you, I'm not fine. You know, swear to God. And then
I think
he kind of laughed, and it was kind of funny.
I think you can keep stalking him. Now, that decision to move to Vegas, it was when you were 15, and what was the basis? You just thought it's the best thing for your golf?
Yeah, it was a bit of golf. My mum went to college over in Boston, and she kind of wanted to move back, and also, so it would have been easier. It was kind of easiest for us to move over, and my mum to get a job, and for us to get life started over here than if she hadn't have come here earlier in her 20s. So we thought it'd be a great move for golf. The PGA Tour is the place to be, and also for collegiate golf, it's an amazing experience, and it's also like it's its own tour within itself, and everything's free, travel, entry fees, school. So I thought it'd be a great, feeder into professional golf. And so far I'm loving it, and the hype, the top amateurs in the world are all in college golf right now, with Cole Hammer and John Holmstein, the USM champ, and everything like that. I love college golf, and trying to get into the frame of mind for the tour, we thought it would be a good move. And also the one of the big moves we made was at the time the Aussie dollar was equal to the American dollar at the time, which we would have got screwed. So, I think it's about 60 cents for the dollar now, but I think we're about, just above it at the time. So I thought, this is the window. So,
We see so many amateurs when they play in the professional tournaments, they get overwhelmed at some stage. Now, an amateur might play a good one round or two rounds, but you played really good over the four rounds. How did you keep yourself calm and in the moment at all times?
I had to keep telling myself, these are, normal people, after seeing Adam Scott, I realized, he's, he's still a nice guy. He likes to surf. He's got a family. He's still a normal person. And reminding myself that it is still golf, just because it's got the label of, pro tournament and the big grandstands. I had to, that was my main goal for the week, was to try and really treat it as any other golf tournament. So that was my mindset, Even though visually, you get grandstands and, you got lots of people out there watching and stakes are higher, I was really playing mental games with myself to treat it as any other golf tournament. And, once you get over the first tee nerves and, you're all pumped up, I was able to settle in. I have had quite a few rounds out at this course, so... just trying to get, everything was familiar. It felt, just from the mind games I was playing with myself.
It is time to talk netball now, because the domestic season might be finished, but the international season still is well and truly in play. And Caitlin Thwaites is part of the Diamonds, and she joins us this morning. Caitlin, hello.
Hi, how are you guys?
We're going very well, thank you. What... just preparing for this, did you just keep training through, or did you have a couple of weeks off before you got into this? Because it does make a long season for you.
Yeah, it definitely is. We've kind of been going since we had the international tour at the start of the year in January, and then obviously our domestic season. We had World Cup in the middle of our domestic season, finished that, and then the Constellation Cup. So it's kind of, I guess, depended on where your specific team kind of went in terms of the finals. So those that finished up a little bit earlier managed to get maybe a little bit more time off. But the ones who kind of managed to get all the way through to the finals have just kind of kept ticking along. We had maybe 1 week of being able to just kind of do what you wanted. If you wanted to have a little bit of chill time, you could do that. But I guess in terms of that kind of, we talk about that training load, you don't want to kind of slack off for too long because then it's harder to get your body back up and ready to go. So we've just been ticking along and keep going, keep the training happening.
So when you look at your own situation, obviously it's a you know, it's fantastic to represent your country. But are you tired considering what you've gone through? It's been a significant year for you both internationally and domestically. Or are you ready to go because you're playing for Australia and you can't be more excited?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's, you know, probably at the end of the season, I was definitely feeling the, oh, I'm tired. I don't know how we're going to kind of get ourselves up. But as soon as, you know, the announcement happens and that sort of thing, it just gives you that, like, you kind of get that second wind, I guess. You get that, you know, the rush of adrenaline, of the excitement and the, you know, I guess that motivation again to, right, we've got another thing to try and overcome and, you know, and get ourselves up for. So, I guess there's probably been a week of feeling that, oh, I'm exhausted and I'm tired and I just want to have a break. But, I think that probably lasted about a week for me. And then you get on to the next thing and get really pumped about it. So, I think we're all in that space of just being really, really hungry and ready to take on the next challenge.
So you got three games in a week and then the fourth match is a week apart. So it's almost like a little bit of tournament play over those first three games particularly.
Yeah. I think, you know, we're pretty used to that with the Constellation Cup type style. So we kind of get into a bit of a routine of, you know, we have get to whichever city you're playing in, you have a couple of trainings, you know, captains run before the game, we've got game day, and then the following day is recovery and travel to the next destination, and then, you know, you kind of cycle through that for the first couple of games. So it'll be pretty fast-paced the first three, and then we get a little bit of a little bit more training time in between the third and the fourth game over in Perth. So it'll be nice to have some sunshine and beach to aid with that recovery as well.
Caitlin, the coach, I'm reading some quotes from the coach. She's not mucking around. She's saying I'm not just rotating. The rotation policy's out. It's game on. If I play the same players for the whole tournament, I do.
Yep. Well, I don't think there has ever been a rotation policy in the Diamonds. I think... you know, it's great the amount of depth that we've got in our group, and you know, I think Leif has been great at showing, you know, in terms of having faith in our players to get out there and do their job, and also looks at, I guess, you know, the opposition that we're coming up against and who might suit the tactics of what we're trying to do when we get out there. So I think, you know, it'll be these games when we have four games against the same opposition, I feel like it's a bit of a chess game because, you know, you show your hand in one game about what one strategy might look like, and then the other team will probably come back and try and counter that the next game. So I guess you've got to be thinking on the fly to try and come up with things that will, you know, counter what the opposition are putting out there, and that sort of plays out across the four games.
And with the World Cup disappointment, is it sort of unspoken, or is it something the players have talked about? How are you going to handle that?
Yeah, we don't, you know, we definitely address that kind of stuff. We don't kind of sit on it and let it fester or anything like that. So I guess the thing that we've got to be mindful of is that we've got players in the group that weren't there and weren't a part of that group, as much as they still feel the disappointment of the team as well. So I guess there's a certain level of, we've addressed it, we've all watched the game back, we've tried to take as many learnings out of that specific game as we can. You know, we had two games against them over there. We won one by one goal and we lost one by one goal. So I guess, you know, we're really trying to narrow down some of those smaller, finer things, and making sure that we're making the right decisions at the right moments in time. So, yeah.
So you obviously talk about the loss, and the loss, it's by the smallest of margins, obviously. Now, people think you have to change so much. Do you feel like there needs to be a big change within the team, or is it simply just about executing better at those critical moments?
Yeah, there's definitely, I guess, that, you know, the thought process of how and why and all of those types of things. But we're definitely, you know, we're not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We're not, you know, literally starting again. It's really, you know, small changes that I think we need to make. So, You know, obviously we're wanting to really, I guess, assert our dominance on, you know, the being world number one, but not having the World Cup. It definitely hurts, and we're using that as a huge driver. But I guess for us, you know, it's getting very close at the pointy end now. There's 3 and 4 teams that are coming within, you know, a couple of goal margin at the top end of world netball at the moment. And so for us, I guess, you know, definitely we're looking at what's going to give us that edge to kind of, you know, gain a bit of ground at the top, so, you know, so that we are that much better again, that teams aren't getting that close to us. But we're constantly working at that kind of stuff, but we're really wanting to kind of, I guess, create some more space for ourselves at that top end as well.
Still can't believe it, to be honest. Absolutely wrapped, excited, mixed emotions, you know. Obviously sad to leave Geelong, you know, but they'll always hold a special place in my heart, that's for sure. And, just excited about what we can achieve here at West Coast over the next few years.
Tim Kelly talking about moving from the Cats to the Eagles and wearing the West Coast Eagles polo shirt. I wonder whether that was hard for Stephen Wells to stomach yesterday. He joins us now. Stephen, thanks very much for your time.
Good morning, fellas. No worries at all.
Is it tough hearing it and seeing it when he's wearing an Eagles jumper, or is that just the business of AFL footy?
Oh, no, of course it's tough. It's tough from a Geelong Football Club point of view and our list and our aspirations for the coming years, losing a player like Tim. But knowing Tim the person and understanding that the only reason he wanted to leave Geelong were for family reasons, totally understand his decision there. And that's the way, the respect we showed him in trading him home is the way I'd like to be treated myself, I suppose, and most people would in their workplaces.
And I guess in your situation, you've had similar scenarios where players have wanted to come to you to sort of get back home, so you kind of could understand where he was coming from.
No doubt about that. There's swings and roundabouts in footy, and I guess even last year with Gary Rowan and Luke Dalhouse joining us, before that Paddy Dangerfield, and I'm sure in the future there'll be plenty of players to-ing and fro-ing or coming and going to all sorts of different clubs for a variety of reasons, and it's just how those clubs and players deal with it will be important. And I think in this one, everyone could see in what or hear in what Tim said yesterday how much he respected and appreciated the Geelong Footy Club opportunity. But back to the first question, looking at Tim Kelly playing for the Eagles, it certainly makes a big hole in our midfield though.
Yeah, so you've got about 426 draft picks in return. Are you happy with the outcome? Obviously, you have to be reasonably happy because you wouldn't have done the deal otherwise, but with what you've got and what you can now do?
Oh, under the circumstances, we're happy. I mean, there's a West Coast were outstanding in our dealings with them. The fact is that with Tim out of contract, we could have actually got nothing for him. He could have somehow or other ended up in the draft, and we get no compensation. So to West Coast's great credit, through Craig Vozzo and Scott Clayton and Ryan O'Brien, they dealt in good faith right from the start. They realised they were getting an unbelievable player, and were able to do the deal that we did. So now we look forward. That's, Tim's gone and we've got the draft picks in, and over the next week we'll be looking to do what we can to improve our position in the either on our list or at the draft, and then going to the draft table with whatever we're left with.
Wellesley, was there any temptation to wait to see if West Coast could improve their draft hand before you did the deal?
And we did speak to them about that, and they tried hard for a while to put some picks together to get up into the top 10 of the draft. But the decision in the end, because that wasn't getting finalised, not because West Coast weren't trying, they were doing a great job with it. But in the end, we just decided, let's get the picks in our hand and see what we could turn them into ourselves, and see what other opportunities come our way as well.
Now, we live in the era of draft points and the like, and draft index. Now, your points index from this trade is equivalent to better than a round one pick. Was that always what it sort of needed to be in terms of to make you guys feel comfortable and happy with some sort of fair value for the trade?
I think it needed to be It needed to look right. Once again, within the back of our mind, the thought that we mightn't have got anything out of it all. But it was really the two top 10 picks as opposed to the pick number one. So when we put 14 and 37 together, or the future first round with pick 24 together, that adds up to two top 10 picks. And to West Coast, great credit. They were happy to get the deal done, but I think they had great motivation because they were getting Tim Kelly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Wellesley, so part of the million scenarios on your whiteboard is putting a couple together to try and get inside the top 10. Would that be high up on the list?
Certainly. It's a possibility, yes. High up on the list? Yeah, probably it is. We've got those five really good picks now, including a couple that were already ours. And what we will do over the course of the morning today is have a big meeting where we're going to go through a whole lot of scenarios that might be trading into next year's draft, at trading for a player. We're still open to doing that if the right deal came our way. If we can get up the order without compromising our situation, we're certainly open to that. We understand the statistics from the draft. The higher you are, and particularly in the top 10, the better your chances are of getting a star player.
What about the ruck situation, Wells? It was debated a lot in the second half of the year. Are you in the market to try and find one? What's Zach Smith's future at the Cats, etc.?
There's been a lot of talk about our ruck situation, and I think we should all acknowledge that Reece Stanley had his best year with the club. Now, the second half of the year, Reece would say himself that he'd like to have been a bit more consistent. But we're hopeful that that trend continues for Reece. And with Asava Radigalia, that combination works well for us when it's going well. We had a good crack at Todd Goldstein, which was common knowledge, I think, out there. But other than that, we're not just chasing other ruckmen for the sake of it. We won't have access to the star ruckman, like Brody Grundy or Max Gorn. And so we're comfortable with the rucks we've got. I don't think we'll be trading for any other ruckman. And as far as Big Zach Smith goes and Ryan Abbott, we'll have Darcy Ford will definitely be here next year. Well, those guys, through trade period, we'll probably have one less ruckman next year on our list, I reckon.
And what about Lachie Henderson? Where's he at? He's out of contract?
Yeah, Lachie's out of contract, and so we're going to wait until after trade period and finalise what the future looks like for Lachie. We are tight for list spots. We've been to the draft a lot in the last 3 years, and we've got to create some opportunities for those guys. And now that we've got a good draft hand, the decision on some players, not necessarily Lachie specifically, some players is impacted by the fact that we've got earlier draft picks than later draft picks. So, all those guys that are out of contract now, we've had good conversations with them, and they know that it will be into next week before things are finalised.
We were talking earlier in the show and earlier in the week about the importance of getting deals done as early as possible if you're looking to then do other things. Was that a factor for you? Because we've got a situation with Joe Danaher that it might go right to the end and Essendon's left with no time to get other things done. What about your situation with Tim Kelly? Was that a bit of a premium for you to get it done as quickly as possible?
Ideally that would be the case. And if we can get a deal like we got done early in the week, then we're happy to say, well, that's it. That's as good as we can do. Let's move on. Every other club will have their own scenarios. But if the deal hadn't been good enough for us early on, well, then we would have had to sit and wait, like your example there with Essendon. So we would have had no problem going later. But as it turns out, we've done a deal pretty early, which does open up some good opportunities for us to then use those picks that we ended up with in whatever way we want. So early was good, but only because it was a good deal and West Coast were fair in their dealings.
Because you are very good at this. You seem to be able to, I know you didn't want to lose Tim Kelly, but you seem to be able to get what you want, both players coming in and going out. You've got a very good record at this.
Well, thank you. But all I try to be is reasonable and fair, and I hope that people believe what I say when I say it, when we're doing our dealings. And I'm pleased to be able to say I've got a really good relationship with literally everyone in the footy industry. And what we've been able to do in the past doesn't mean what we'll be able to do in the future. So every deal that comes our way in the future will be a whole new set of circumstances, I'm sure.
What's reasonable and fair for Jack Stephens, Stephen?
Everybody will have their own opinion on that. And St Kilda have got every right, given that he's their contracted player, to set their own market for it. And what they think is reasonable, I can totally understand. I mean, he's a revered player down there, and what they've talked about getting for Jack, I can understand that. But we'll have our own cost-benefit that we'll take into account as well, and the risks involved with Jack's unfortunate circumstances this year. So, as I said, everybody will have their own opinion about what's right and wrong, and this time it just might not match up.
Are you confident he'll be at Geelong?
No, I'm not confident in that one. I can see a scenario where he definitely could be at Geelong, but we're going to go have a good talk today again about the picks we've got and how we can best use them, and best using them doesn't necessarily match up in this scenario.
And the sort of the cap space that you allowed for Kelly, now he's gone. A lot of people have texted into us saying, are the Cats in the market for a big-name player because they've got cap space? Are you?
Well, we could have been. With our cap space, it's always tight, and we've done a number of scenarios, and I think you'd all understand we anticipated that Tim might leave, so we've spent money in other ways or different ways of looking at things. But right now, I can't imagine one of the biggest profile players, highest profile players, would be coming to our club this year, but we'll be in a good position to have a real crack at free agency and trading next year, if nothing else happens this year.
Andy Harper joins us. We're going to talk some soccer now because the Socceroos are in action tonight, but also the A-League season starts tomorrow night. We're finally back in action with the A-League. Andy, thanks very much for your time.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's a great time of year for us soccer fans.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I don't know really where to start, whether to start with the Socceroos because it's tonight or the A-League because it starts tomorrow night. How much are you looking forward to this A-League season, particularly with a new team and a lot of key players changing clubs? How do you sort of see it?
Well, I'm always excited about the start of A-League, but then I'm excited about the start of any comp that I follow, as all your listeners would be. You know, when the Aussie Rules comes around next autumn, everyone's gagging for the comp to start after the break. And as much as the competitions, you know, AFL with the draft and NRL with various tournaments, and soccer does seem to go for a long time, these sports try to keep things going in the off-season. There's nothing like the white-hot competition to 3 points, and that starts for the A-League this weekend. And soccer fans can't wait for it. It's been a very difficult few years for the game because of the Civil War, but I think we're very happy to say that's behind us now. We can build solidly for a much improved future starting on Friday night with Adelaide and Sydney. It'll be a good season. It'll be a lot of fun. A new team from the western area of Melbourne, Western United. That's going to provide a lot of spice. Melbourne derbies all over the place this season, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
How do you think the new team in Western Melbourne will go? Because we haven't heard much about them. We know, obviously, about Victory and Sydney, but they've kind of gone under the radar, and that's been kind. We haven't heard much about them at all.
I would suggest that you probably haven't heard much from anyone in soccer circles up until now. And that's been the function of a few circumstances. But what I can tell you about Western United is they've been very well put together. This team is going to be very competitive from the get-go. Of course, the biggest name to your listenership would be the return of Bessart Berisha, formerly of Melbourne Victory, to the A-League. He'll be leading the attack for Western United. They've got two fantastic foreigners in Panayotis Kone and Alexander Diamante, a Greek and an Italian, both extreme pedigree out of Europe. And Mark Rudan, second-year coach in the A-League, did a brilliant job with Wellington. He's put together a really good team. And it's important for Western United. The big story about them is that they're going to be the first professional team in Australia of any code to own their own stadium. Now, that process is underway. It's about 3 years off. So they'll be playing in assorted venues out of Geelong and whatnot in the meantime. So it's really important that whilst they're building this stadium and getting their home ready, they build a very, very competitive team to get people noticing them. And I think they'll achieve that. Very impressed with their recruitment.
And you talk about what happened over the past couple of years with the A-League, and you talk about building solidly for the future. What do you think are the key aspects to do that over the next couple of years? Melbourne Victory chairman talks about the game might be in a holding pattern for 12 months, yeah. But how do you think the game can build, well, not quickly, but yeah, like you say, yeah. Solidly?
Well, I think it can build quickly. The game in Australia is incredibly resilient. It's incredibly popular. The A-League has, over the last decade and a half, given it its best chance at club level to grow on the back of the enormous foundations laid by the NFL over, you know, 20-odd years. So there's a really deep seedbed for soccer. What it needs in the immediate term is this consolidation, which the clubs are talking about, and then investment, and then an ownership group who are just dead set on winning the thing. And over time, there have been owners who've come and gone from the league whose focus has really been more on occupying a licence. David Gallup referred to it, quote-unquote, as squatting on a licence. And, you know, that doesn't really excite fans. They want clubs and owners who are desperate to win the thing. It sounds crazy talking in those terms about professional sport, but I think that criticism could have been levelled on one or two occasions at various clubs. So that's the most important thing. And the next thing is that people need to be aware of, it really does take a little bit of time to build intergenerational, obviously by definition, support for your teams. Now, you look at the might and power of the AFL and we all sit back in wonder, particularly if you don't live in Victoria. If you live north of the Murray, put it that way, I mean, Adelaide people get it and Perth people get it. But if you live north of the Murray, you just look at the AFL in wonder. And what you realise is that it's a great competition, but that's not its strength. The strength of the AFL are these massive clubs with huge connection from their fans going over 100 years. That, 100 years doesn't happen overnight by its very definition. And that's what aspiring leagues like the A-League need to focus on, and work hard in the meantime, invest smartly, get aggressive, want to win the thing, bring fans to you. But the benchmark is the AFL, and they've got an unbridled advantage in the fact that they're 100 years older.
Andy, on Victory and City down here, what's your take on who might end up better this year?
We're all waiting for Melbourne City to become what they need to become. And until they do, I'll sort of hold the reins back on them. Melbourne Victory have got form on the board. I think they've put together another fantastic team. They've lost a lot of talent, but they've brought in some fantastic players. I mean, players with top-level European international experience, not just club experience. Jakob Poulsen, the Dane, is an incredibly clever player. He's got 30 or 40 caps for the Danish national team. And you know, they're always very, very competitive in European and World Cup campaigns. And he's probably the highlight on the back of Ola Toivonen, who's in for his second year captain of the club, the Swedish star. Andrew Nabut and Robbie Cruz, you know, a lot of firepower, a lot of athleticism, enormous amount of quality in the recruitment. And, you know, Melbourne Victory are going to be very difficult to beat. The strange thing about the A-League is, although it's an equalised competition with salary cap and limits to the roster, etc., there's a definite heavyweight division already in the A-League, and it's certainly the teams out of Sydney and Melbourne. With Perth now under Tony Popovich, just making it very difficult for an outsider to get into that top five. But that remains the challenge for everyone. And I think of the two in Melbourne, Victory have their noses clearly in front.
Now, talk about heavyweights, Australia v Nepal. What are we expecting tonight?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a few ways to look at this. Firstly, the national team of Australia is playing for World Cup qualifying points. So that's the most important thing. The next thing is, you know, the team, how it goes. It's still early, relatively early in Graham Arnold's tenure. And these teams, which don't provide the same sort of opposition, are an opportunity for the coach and players to get some systems and some form bedded down, and particularly for someone to bang some goals away and start getting into the habit of scoring goals, which has been difficult at national team level and gets increasingly difficult as we play the bigger teams. The third point is to enjoy the occasion, particularly from a Nepal viewpoint. I mean, this is like their World Cup final. Mm. And you speak to Nepal fans, and given, you know, the troubles in that country, you know, the economic issues, the corruption in sport, which is, you know, widely reported, and how that impacts upon teams like their national football team in being competitive, they don't even dream of coming to Australia, playing in the capital against one of the best teams in Asia. This is a lifetime experience for these fans, and Australia is hosting this, and it's a big thing. You know, we've got 100,000 or so Nepalese Australians as part of our community. They'll be in Canberra in big numbers, celebrating their culture. And this is one of the magical aspects of these World Cup qualifying campaigns against these teams from whom not much is expected. But they'll deliver a big party atmosphere. It'll be a lot of fun.
Brad Green there joins us, former Melbourne star, who is helping a former coach because today starts Danaher's Drive. And it goes to all of country Victoria, and Brad's on the line. Brad, thanks very much for your time.
Good morning, guys. How are you going?
Yeah, we're going well, thank you. I guess it's an opportunity for you to get back involved with Neil.
Yeah, it is. It's a in its fifth year, the Danaher Drive, and look, we're driving around country Victoria trying to raise funds to fight MND. So it's a great cause to help out a great man. He's a fantastic mentor of mine, and what a great coach he was. For the Demons, he's been great. So it's, we're all happy. We've got about, I think, about 10 to 15 past players along the drive with him, and it's a great 3 days.
So, Greeny, I'm very interested who's in your car and how are you sharing the driving for these couple of days?
Well, it comes down to who's the most sober, I think. We've certainly drive responsible, so we've got a couple of breathos going along the drive. But no, I've got Adam Uze, I've got Cameron Bruce, Daniel Ward, and Simon Godfrey in our car. So we share the responsibility, and it's good fun.
Is that Adam Uze the next Adelaide coach, Greeny?
Well, that's what we're trying to get out of him this morning. He told us, and it's exclusive for you guys, that he gets notified the next couple of days, so we might give you a call.
Oh, I like this. Now, on the great Neil Danaher, have you got one favourite story from his time as coaching you?
There's many. But look, Danis was the type of character that that certainly didn't say much, walking around, you know, change room banter. But when he certainly got into game day mode, and I remember one game at half time, I think we were down by quite a fair bit, and when Neil walked in, he had this stare in his eyes, and he had this persona about him that everyone stood up and made everyone sort of want to go out there and play for him. But, you know, the stories about Neil, the way he got the boys to play was exceptional. So, no, he's been great. There's no true stories about him. He just went about his business the way he does.
I mean, he's an incredible man, considering what he is going through. We've seen television shots of him this morning getting ready for the drive that you're participating in, and he just keeps going along. And sometimes you look at him, you think that there's nothing wrong with him.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. You know, for a guy to go through an illness and what he's going through, you know, the motor neurons disease, what he's got, and to be still here and still fighting, it's extraordinary. What he's doing and what he's trying to achieve, you know, it's a credit to him. I don't think anyone else in this world can do what Neil does. And I think that's what keeps driving him, knowing that he's trying to help because he's not thinking about himself. That's the one thing Neil is selfless in the sense that he's trying to find a cure for everybody else but himself.
Yeah, that's a good point. So the Victorian government this morning, the state government of... putting an extra $1 million of funding for Fight MND, which is an incredible gesture in itself. For those, we've got a lot of listeners, Brad, in country Victoria here at RSN. For those that might want to come along and say hello, where are you actually heading?
Basically, we're away for 3 days. So we're starting here in Werribee Zoo. We're heading down towards Port Arlington and Lawn for lunch. And then we're heading into Ballarat and that for the first night.
Yep.
Second day, we're going through Heathcote, Ngambie, and we finish in Wangaratta for Friday night. And then from Wangaratta, we come down through Alexandra and have a last function on Saturday night in Mornington. So we're doing a fair bit of driving,
yeah,
which is great. And we're hoping to stop off in every town, every pub, every street corner, looking to keep raising funds for Fight MND.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.